Have you heard about this grain called kavalja or an aromatic spice called silphium? We will talk about it, about them a bit and then some more. And about the ones that are around us and the destiny that we share. But first, you are tuning in to the Audible Weed Walk number 64. This is Nina welcoming you. Today is the last day of the COP26. This week, I read two articles regarding food, especially local food that are diverse, well-adapted and healthy. I thought of talking to you about this topic because the very many discussions and the presentations at the COP26 somehow are not talking enough about them. The two articles I read are actually based on two books by the authors. The books, I haven't got them in my hand, but the articles kind of summarizes them. The first one is Eating to Extinction by Dan Saladino. Guardian is carrying an article on that. And the second one is Leonard Newman's Lost Feast, Culinary Extension and the Food of the Future. Kavalja is a variety of wheat grown in the eastern Anatolia region of Turkey, now in the last few fields, but has been a major crop in the region for the past over 10,000 years. Imagine that. Silphium was mentioned by Newman as one of the most popular flavoring agent and even fodder at one time, growing profusely and abundantly, but now lost to extinction. In Western Denmark in 1950s, a body was found that was over 2,500 years old and it was pretty intact. From the stomach content, it was determined that the person had eaten porridge of several grains and 40 different plants. 40, imagine. And I was talking about choddo shag, the ceremonial eating of 14 greens, in an example of incorporating diverse green in our diet. So you see, our diet has actually definitely become more less diverse and more impoverished over time. There are several things that are on play here. First, it seems there are much more than 300,000 plant species across the world that are known to science and that are known as food items. Of course, there are many more that are unknown and undocumented by science. They are known to human, of course. They hold the key to the resilience of this planet. But we now eat only a minuscule of them, and many of the known varieties like the kavalja or the silphium have moved to extinction for being out of favor and not eaten anymore. Why? Not because they are not tasty or not highly nutritious. In fact, on the contrary, perhaps more. But the reason can be many. They grow better in certain weather or soil. They may not be too great for standard machine processing. Our own millets face that obstacle. Their habitat may have got destroyed by the conversion and large-scale farming, or they may not be storing well and transporting well as well as the other varieties. I have a distinct memory as a child of having traveled to Agra, where the city of Taj Mahal, where my mother purchased a watermelon the size round and size larger than a soccer ball. But carrying it with difficulty in a taxi, the potholed road jerked and the watermelon broke. I think I remember it because of the drama that ensued. So we had to quickly eat up the watermelon. Of course, the taxi driver also got a share. It was extremely juicy and sweet, but the sticky juice kind of, spoiled his taxi. So he got some extra to get his taxi cleaned, as I remember. But you see, these watermelons, they do not travel easily and take up too much shelf life. So we do not see them anymore. What we find is palm-sized watermelon with thick rind and travel savvy. Newman says that this way we have lost 90 to 95% of the vegetable cultivars and 80 to 90% of the fruit cultivars already. Should I tell you another story? Do we have time? Well, let me tell you. This is closer to home. About my dad, who always intended to be a good gardener, but wasn't one. He was good in many things, but not at gardening. But what he lacked in gardening skill, he compensated with gardening zeal that sometimes caused much irreparable damage to the plants, much to my mother's chagrin. The rest of us used to have a good laugh later. But over the years, he could really grow a good amount of microgreens, and he really got good in growing loofah. Yes, the kind that now is very popular in demand for as a scrubber. There are perhaps many varieties of loofah, but in Bengal, we are used to two common varieties. There used to be two common varieties. One is a long one, a large one, which resulted in scrubber, and the other, smaller one and a sweeter one, which we used to eat when it is green and still hasn't reached the scrubber stage. With the green economy driven demand, the scrubber loofah has outcompeted this sweet edible loofah. And they haven't got quite extinct though, but definitely forgotten as a vegetable. And farmers and gardeners like my dad grow them. And still there are seeds that are shared generously. But in the market, you hardly find them. So sometimes they are out of favor. But when they are in much demand, they can also drive into extinction. Like what happened to passenger pigeons in North America. A bird that was so abundant, it seems endless, was predated by humans within 200 years. Predation was perhaps not the only cause. Passenger pigeon needed forest as their nesting sites, and simultaneous heavy logging as the European settlers were settling in the USA perhaps caused that also. We talk a lot about this bird, ignoring many others from the tropics without making headlines, without a general consciousness or knowledge about them. When a species or a variety goes extinct, along with that, language, the knowledge about it, the culture around that species, plant or animal also dies. And our resilience as a species weakens. Wait a minute. At this stage, you might be thinking, no way. I eat a lot more diverse food than my parents ever did. We now have noodles, pasta, pizza, dim sum, sushi, pretty much wherever you're located, doesn't matter. Food that our grand or great-grandparents may not have even tasted. Now they are, you know, sold in our Kirana shops. Think again. Is that diversity? Of the 6,000 plant species humans have eaten over time, I guess the sort of the major ones, like the grains, etc., only 9 of them are commonly eaten. Of which rice, wheat, corn, potato, barley, palm oil, soy and sugar, both beet and cane, account for 75% of all the calories that humans intake. Of course, the varieties are lost in the process. Dr. Debal Deb says, in India alone, had greater than 1 lakh varieties of rice and have only 6,000 left, and many of them just as a rescued variety growing in his farm. Note, just growing organic is not a solution. I find an overpresence of Poni and Sona Masuri rice in the organic rice section in the grocery stores now. Variety diversity is the key, not just organic. What happens when the key food base gets so narrow? Look no further, but yet another well-documented species from the West as an example. One species that are cited as an example in population study a lot is Canadian lynx. Lynx is a type of largish cat species and its favorite prey, a snowshoe hare. Canadian lynx do eat other species, but prefers to eat snowshoe hare, which constitutes 75% of the diet. So you would see that they are quite narrowly eating snowshoe hare. So if one looks at their population of the hare and the lynx and plot them, they seem to chase each other. When the hare population increases, lynx eat them a lot and the population and the lynx population increase. But then they eat too much. So the hare population drops. And soon after, the lynx population drops as well. This is their natural cycle in a cold, less diverse area of the world compared to tropics. In the tropics, the species diversity and the varieties are countless. Only if we know how to eat them, appreciate them, and make them our own modern recipes out of them, like the wild, weedy, uncultivated greens, while ensuring we do not over-harvest them. Asestesia gangetica, or gangetic primrose, the leaves and the flowers are excellent as fresh and raw in salad. They incorporate well in lentils and even sautéed, especially with mushroom. They pair very well. They also make a great pesto. So don't get stuck with the limited food items or even recipes. Bend, twist, adapt, but eat a more diverse set of plants. Similarly, check each time if the food you are eating is local or not. If not, is it promoting a more monoculture? Locally, if you get avocados, it is great. But otherwise, monoculture of avocados or even turkey berry, does not matter which one you are eating, are somewhat avoidable. I mentioned turkey berry. It is sundakkai or Solanum torvum, a wild weedy plant from my book. But people are growing them now in their farms. Visit the farms and see how they are growing. Krishna Mackenzie in Solitude Farm grows a few plants in between other crops and plants. Not in rows of turkey berry plantation, sort of. But I've heard the farmers are doing so. Avoid the latter. Promote the farms that are promoting biodiversity. And I have a feeling they are healthier as well. United Nations headquarters in New York, there, Emmanuel Faber, who is a CEO of a large dairy conglomerate, had recently made a statement, and I'm quoting, "We thought with science we could change the cycle of life and its rules. We thought that we could feed ourselves with monoculture and based most of our world's food supply on a handful of plants. This approach was now bankrupt." Faber explained, "We have been killing life and now we need to restore it." If you are not a vegan already, you do not need to if you do not want to be. But incorporate more plant-based food in your diet because it is good for your body and good for the planet. If you are non-vegetarian, we have a long tradition of eating offals of all animals that have gone out of fashion in the mainstream. How many books do you find on how to make mozzarella cheese at home or learn or lean mean vegan burgers as opposed to how to eat offals? These knowledge are important for us and also to conserve the biodiversity. Irrespective of our isms, avoid wasting food. Keep vegetable scraps for a wonderful vegetables broth before you compost them. Learn how to use plants that you did not know could be cooked and eaten, like rinds of watermelon, or come for weed walk and be a weeder and eat more greens that are growing wild. Most importantly, have fun eating. Eat healthy, eat local, eat micronutrient-rich plants, different ones in different seasons. Each bite will remind you that you are part of conserving the earth. You are taking a step back from the rush towards extinction. Extinction of other species, but of course, we are undeniably linked to them. Let's eat ourselves out of extinction. The first to go green will do the best afterwards. This is not what I think. This is the word of Kim Stanley Robinson, who is actually a science fiction writer. Sometimes when the reality doesn't provide us enough direction. We have to look at science fiction to solve our issues and to help us think clearly. Kim Stanley Robinson thinks that India has a great role in being a leader in this, in solving this issue, and arriving at a way of consumption that is earth-friendly. So he has a book. I actually read an article about this, but better still, you can read the book. It's called The Ministry for the Future. So you see, India has a lot to offer, and we all citizens of the world have a responsibility there. But in doing so, we can also have fun. Being a foodie, that's a really attractive thing. So with that thought, I wish you stay well and stay safe, and see you next time.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the city of Dome.